Welcome to the Very Pink Knits podcast, the companion podcast to the Very Pink Knits YouTube channel. I'm Stacy, and I'm here with Casey.
Hi.
Casey is the media manager here at Very Pink, and she's also producing this show. If you'd like to get your knitting question on the show, just email it to podcast@verypink.com, and be sure to tell us where you're from and the show notes for every episode. Everything we link to, everything we talk about, is available on my website. Just go to verypink.com and click the podcast tab at the top of the page, and you'll see the show notes for every episode. Right?
Right.
This is episode 67.
Right.
Okay. I got through all of it. I didn't mess up once. Mm-hmm. Take one, right?
Got it.
Okay. We have a couple things going on. We have an interview that you did with Clara Parks, the author. And we'll also magically turn some knitting questions into knitting answers, as we always do. And Casey, you want to tell us a little bit about your interview and Clara Parks? I've got her book right here. Whoops, after I spill my water on it. Okay.
So it's a very small world. I was in Maine this summer, and I follow her on Instagram. If you don't know Clara, you should check out one of her many books. She's kind of a yarn expert, I would say. And so she's got several books, and this latest one is an anthology about stash. But anyway, I was following her on Instagram, and she posted a picture of an ice cream stand in Maine, and it was like literally one town over, and I had been to the ice cream stand many times. I was like, what?
So it was just something you recognized, so you knew she was nearby?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we connected, and we were able to sit down for a few minutes, and she told me about her book. So
okay, I want to say the, what's this part of the title called? It's called A Stash of One's Own, and then the next line is Knitters on Loving, Living With, and Letting Go of Yarn.
Yeah, so it's an anthology with several other famous knitters writing their own essays.
Okay.
And she edited them, and she has her own essay in there.
But oh, nice.
I didn't want to give too much away, so we don't get into too many super detailed moments in the interview, but just kind of the overall reason for the book and all that kind of stuff.
So. Okay, let's listen.
My name is Clara Parks. I'm the publisher of Knitters Review and the author of several books about yarn and knitting.
So you're kind of unique in the knitting world because you're not necessarily known for designing. You kind of came to this from a different angle. So give us a little history there.
That's exactly right. I kind of didn't know how to find my way into knitting because I wasn't a designer. So that's where Knitters Review came from, when I realized my passion is yarn and really studying it from kind of a scientific, academic standpoint. As an art history major, I have experience just sitting in a space and studying an object and really going deep about where it came from and how was it constructed and what is its story? What context did it come to being through?
That's so interesting. And so when you started Knitters Review, did you know that was going to be your next career? Was that your goal, or was it a passion project that exploded, I guess?
Not at all. It was a passion project. Yeah. It was 2000, way back. And yeah, I was busy. I was happily employed working for an online comparison shopping site, and we kind of knew it was going to go under, and so we were all sort of just playing around with things, but I had no idea. I remember thinking, well, if this newsletter list ever reaches 1,000, and then I hit 1,000, they're like, well, if I hit 10,000, I'm retiring. And that happened, and now it's at 35,000 strong.
Wow. So you spend time going out to yarn shows and traveling the world and teaching people about yarn?
Yeah, I like to go. I'm always in search of an interesting yarn, you know, that has a story beyond some anonymous mill in some anonymous place that had a stamp, you know, yarn, and it's being sold for a dollar. I'd like to know where it came from, how was it processed, how was it dyed, what are the fibers like, what are the characteristics, what's the farm that it came from, what are the people's challenges who are running that farm, and over time it's kind of become more of that than just the material elements of the wool, because I really am starting to see again and again that knitters have the power, collective power, to impact positive change with all of these small producers around the country and around many, many countries in a positive way that maintains a supply line for us, mm-hmm. but it also, it helps the environment, it helps just local economy. It's a good thing.
Yeah. That's something that I've like started paying attention to, the slow fashion movement and that trend of knowing where your clothes come from and how long you're going to keep your clothes and things like that. So,
yeah, the whole fast, it's I just find it really tragic and frightening. The more we outsource our clothing, I mean, it used to be back in the 70s, it was still, I can't remember the number, but we still made in the U.S. like 80, 70, forgive me, I don't remember the number, but a huge percentage of our clothing was made in this country. And now it's in the single digits, I think maybe even 1%. And I feel like there's such a parallel between that and like not knowing how to grow a tomato. Mm-hmm. You become so vulnerable. And also so disconnected from something that is absolutely elemental to being a human and clothing yourself.
Yeah. I hope that the clothing awareness is going to start kind of like the food awareness, where we have more organic food and people are more conscious than they were before, even though we have a long way to go. So anyway, that's a kind of off topic. But tell me about your newest book.
My newest book is an anthology of writings on the subject of stash. And I really wanted to study it. Like it would be really easy to just go into like that, the single rut of like, stash, we love our yarn, right ladies? But there's so much more to it. And there's so much more than kind of the cultural mockery around knitters and their yarn. And for every single person, there's a very distinct and intimate relationship with their yarn because we live with it. It's in our presence all the time. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to bring in the perspectives of Meg Swanson. She writes about inheriting the stash from Elizabeth Zimmerman and what was in the stash and what was important to her. And then the perspective of a sheep farmer, this perspective of a natural dyer or of a designer for a yarn company or a feminist editor of Bust magazine, for example, or even a licensed a clinical social worker whose job is to help us understand where the line goes between healthy stash and is there maybe a problem? Yeah, and we hear from minimalists and maximalists, yeah. and really just to look deeper at what is this phenomenon, what do we hold on to, what do we count as stash, yeah. and letting go of it is as important a relationship as living with it. So that's what the book is about. It has 22 chapters from a lot of really wonderful people.
So no spoilers, but what did you find? It's a very emotional subject. Did you find, when is it a problem?
It is a very, very emotional subject. And talking about stash size is so, it's like one step away from body size, right? That for a lot of people, love me, love my stash. What I found was really interesting, and this is more just the years and years that I've been out in the world talking to people, is there tends to be a phenomenon, especially among young mothers or women who've recently moved in with their partner and are now living with them and their finances are shared, there's anxiety about bringing more yarn home. And this is the extreme worst, but like, oh, my husband's going to kill me if I bring home any more yarn. And that was what I really wanted to look at, because for me, women have not historically been encouraged to take up space. They have not legally been permitted to own the space that they've had. And so that's where the title came from. I thought about a room of one's own and the whole premise of a woman not being able to fully create unless she has her own space and her own finances. Mm-hmm. And for knitters, those finances are directly related to the yarn we buy.
That's interesting. And I'm finding a lot of feminist themes in a lot of the interviews and a lot of the things that we're talking about these days. So I can't wait to read it. Well, thanks for meeting me. And I'm glad that the Seagulls gave us some nice background. And I can't wait to read your book. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you.
That's great.
Yeah, and it was really, it was a lovely day, summer in Maine, just sitting there.
She sounds nice.
She's very nice. And if you follow her on Instagram, she has hilarious Instagram stories, very detailed stories on Instagram.
A lot of emotion involved.
Oh, yeah.
And like, stashing.
In a lot of those essays, there's a lot of emotion. Like, we get emotional here about stashing.
We do. Isn't that funny? We do. And thank you for the copy of the book. I have a copy of A Stash of One's Own. It is. Did she give this to you?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's a loaned copy.
It's because you want this back.
Yes. Okay. But she just went on her book tour. Also, if you're on Instagram, you saw that she was just at her book tour. So it just came out. So
okay.
It was just fortunate that we were able to get together and talk about
That's
it.
That's nice. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'll read this and get it back to you because you haven't read it yet. You haven't read the whole thing yet. Okay, we've got a puppy who suddenly woke up. Hopefully that was
just to check on me.
He just wanted to make sure you were okay. Mm-hmm. All right, well, we still have time for questions, so let's go ahead and do that.
All right. First question. My question is regarding lotions. I knit quite a bit and find that my hands tend to become dry after knitting for a bit. It's all types of yarns. I was wondering, especially with animal fibers, is there a certain type of lotion to use or not to use? I currently use a lotion that is fragrance-free, paraben-free, and vegan. It's botanical-based. I do not want to hurt any of the yarns I use. Thank you for being a wonderful blessing, Debbie, in the mountains of Southwest Virginia.
Hi, Debbie. I like the way you describe where you're from.
I know. It sounds so beautiful.
Why don't we think about ours, like Stacy from...
The hills of Austin.
Something about the plants. The rolling green hills
of South Austin.
Okay, that's not what this looks like around here. Close to here, there's rolling green hills. Right here, it's mostly in the middle of a neighborhood. But back to the lotion question, I think it's totally a personal preference thing, right? And I like to use lotion bars or solid lotion and not runny lotion. Mm-hmm. And so there's a stuff that I have that's actually... lavender. We're having puppy issues. Excuse us for the fact that I can't say a sentence without
talking.
The stuff that I use is by Lavishy. How do you say that word again?
Lavishy.
Lavishy.
Like shea butter.
I like shea butter. Lavishea. And this was given to me by somebody, I can't remember who, but I actually really like this. It smells like lavender, and it is a bar. It's not a running lotion, and if my hands are a little dry, I'll rub this on them, and it kind of puts a little stick back into them so I can keep knitting. Otherwise, everything just slides around.
Yeah.
Do you have a preference for what you're using?
I have a lotion bar that I picked up at the Interweave Yarn Fest, and I can't remember what brand name it is, but I do like lotion bars because they are not so... slimy.
Yeah. And you know what it is also? Well, here in Texas, and you're already you're already sweaty, right? That's why I have a problem.
We just sweat all the time.
I have a problem with using sunscreen and stuff because I'm already sweaty, and then I'm going to put sunscreen on top of that, and I'm going to sweat under the sunscreen. But I don't want lotions to make my hands sweaty, and this stuff doesn't, and it actually does a good job.
Yeah.
If my skin is really, really dry, like it gets in the wintertime, then I use other stuff, like hardcore... you know, Gold Bond kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But this is great for just knitting. And we can put a link. If I can find this, if it's still available, of course, I'll put a link in the show notes
I'll look up the name of the one that I bought because I think it was just a one-woman run shop. And she also makes lotion bars in like a deodorant stick form for your feet.
So
It's like a peppermint oil.
Nice.
And so I'll
that is
rub
really
that.
Smart.
Yeah. And I put it on my feet and toes and then put some socks on before bed.
And I bet your feet are so soft.
They're lovely.
Perfect. Okay. Yeah, I want to know what that is, too.
Okay.
Is yours scented?
Yeah, it's that one's peppermint.
No, what about the one you use on your hands?
Uh-huh. And I got one for my husband, and because he's a rock climber, and his hands get all crusty. That's
nice.
Not so gross.
Thanks. Thanks, Casey.
Callousy.
There we go.
And the one I got him was called Mr. Darcy.
Oh.
And it smells like...
I can already tell it smells great.
It smells awesome.
Okay. Well, I hope that answers the knitting question.
Mm-hmm.
The lotion question. Our sponsor this week is Otlite. And Otlite is a lamps that crafters use. It is the originator of natural daylight technology and has been around since 1989. Casey and I both use Otlites. Makes it great for making it easy on your eyes when you're working on any kind of crafting. But for me, lately, it's been working with dark yarn and lighting that up. But Casey, you were just mentioning another way that you use your Otlite.
Yeah, for taking photos. Even it's such a striking difference to take a picture under a Otlite. Just with my phone, not even a fancy camera, versus the regular light in my house.
You're using it like a studio light.
Yeah. I have a big over-the-shoulder lamp that's over my chair where I knit, and it just really shines a bright, clear, true color.
It is such a pretty color of light. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yeah.
And it does reduce eye strain. And my Otlite, does yours have different brightness settings?
No.
Mine does.
Oh.
You're going to have to take a look at mine.
Yeah.
anyway, a lot of crafters use them. I know that Otlights have been around for a long time. You see them at crafting stores. And you got yours. They run sales, like at Joann's and stuff, and you got yours on sale.
They had a great sale. It was 50% off this summer, so it was a great deal.
Nice.
So I ended up getting two, actually.
You got You're going to replace all the lamps in your house with Otlights. They have an exclusive LED formulation that reduces eye strain and eye fatigue by 51% compared to other LED desk lamps. And you can really feel it. It's true. If you want to learn more about Otlights, visit the show notes. We will have a link to the Otlight website, or you can go to otlight.com. That's OTTLITE.com.
Hey, Stacey and Casey. On episode 28, you mentioned superwash yarns. I'm having trouble working out which yarns are superwash and which aren't, and wondered if you can answer a few questions for me. Are all machine washable yarns superwash yarns, even if they don't say superwash in the name? What about if a ball band says machine washable wool? Is this another way of calling yarn superwash? If you don't mind hand washing an item, do you think non-superwash wools are better choices in terms of softness and look of the finished item? Any information you can give about superwash versus regular wool would be greatly appreciated. And by the way, I knit mostly baby items and love knitting with natural fibers best. Thanks for your help. Kind regards, Jennifer from Western Australia.
Okay, Jennifer, this is all good. This is like everything you ever wanted to know about superwash yarns. And superwash yarns are generally just a kind of a generic term put on any yarns that are wool or mostly wool that can be machine washed and usually machine dried as well, but not always. You always have to look at the yarn label to see exactly how. If something, maybe something can be machine washed but not dried, you know, it varies. Are all machine washable yarns superwash, even if they don't say superwash in the name? Yes, I would say all machine washable wool yarns are superwash. And there might be like something in the industry that I don't know, that if something is 50% wool and 50% acrylic, it's not officially a superwash wool, because the way that superwash wool becomes superwash wool is they actually do something chemically to remove the scales on the outside of the hair so that when it's machine washed, it won't felt together. Mm-hmm. Did you know this already?
I think we've talked about it before, maybe.
I'm sure we probably have. And it might just be that a yarn has enough of the acrylic in it to keep it from felting, and the wool has not been treated with this chemical. There might be something in the industry like that. I would just say that, just knitters talking, you would say, yeah, I got this great superwash wool. It just means you can wash the wool. So what if a ball band says machine washable wool? Is that another way of calling it the yarn superwash? Yeah, in common terms, I would say yes. If you don't mind hand washing an item, do you think non-superwash wools are better choices in terms of softness and the look of the finished item? That is impossible to answer, because you're going to find non-superwash wools, like say a beautiful merino wool that is perfectly, beautifully soft, and then you're going to find a regular wool that is scratchy as cement.
That's my rock climbing.
As your husband's crusty hands. You're going to find acrylic yarns that are beautiful and soft, or superwash acrylic. All fibers are, you know, the whole range of softness and stuff. So you can't generalize and say that a superwash wool is going to be.
Yeah. I kind of feel like some superwash wools feel almost like waxy-ish.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe it's in my head.
Like, what are you thinking of? Like sock yarns, or what are you thinking
of? Yeah. Like, it just feels like it feels like there's something on it to me.
That might be the dye.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
I don't know. I've never experienced that. Maybe it's a lotion you're using.
Maybe it's all in my head.
And any information you can give me about superwash versus regular wool? Mm-hmm. The main thing is to follow the washing instructions on the yarn label, because and always swatch before you start knitting something, because superwash wool can sometimes get wet and grow and grow and grow the way that a regular non-superwash wool will not. Mm-hmm. So if something, you always want to swatch and wash and block your swatch the way you're going to wash and block the finished item. But if you, for instance, knit a superwash sweater and then hand wash it and then set it out flat to dry, you might end up with a sweater that is 5 times bigger than you thought it was going to be. But if you had just thrown it in the washing machine, it would come out the way you're expecting. Sometimes, just the way it will work.
And she says she likes knitting baby items, and I just want to put another shout out to cotton baby items, because those get so soft after many, many washes.
Oh, just the cotton gets softer?
Mm-hmm. Like a lovey blanket that I wash often.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, okay. And I also want to know if somebody from Western Australia, because we get notes from Western Australia, like, is that distinctly different? They must have some kind of, like, pride of being from Western Australia.
It must be just what they call themselves, maybe.
Yeah, because we don't get any from Eastern Australia. What's the deal, Australia?
Somebody will chime in.
Next question. When felting, should you stretch the fabric for shaping each time you wash it, or do you wait until it's felted to size before shaping? Thank you, Lisa from Wisconsin.
Okay. When I put this question in there, I read it like 5 times trying to make sure I really understood. When felting, should you stretch the fabric for shaping each time you wash it, or do you wait until it's felted to size before shaping? She's talking about like every time you wash it after it's finished, like a year?
No, I think like during the felting process, maybe. That's the way I took it.
Okay. That makes more sense. I'm thinking like she's saying, you know, 3 months along down the line, you want to, okay, yes, the way you figured it, yes. Okay, let me just answer it that way then. I would say that when I'm felting something, I usually don't mess a lot with the shaping of it, as long as I'm pulling it out of the washing machine and then I'm seeing that the stitches are still really defined. And then once it starts to felt enough that I can't see the stitches anymore, I might start shaping it a little bit, just kind of see where I am. But I don't actually shape it into a shape until I'm finished.
Mm-hmm.
What about you? You've done a lot of felting.
Not a lot. I've done a couple bags and stuff. But yeah, I wait until it's to the felted point that I want it.
Yeah, it wouldn't even do any good to start shaping it before then.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
You get up to the size. Wait, did you find the lotion?
I found my lotion bar.
Okay.
I happen to have one in my little travel knitting. It's Barmaids, BAR-maids.com, and it's the Lolo bar.
The Lolo bar. Mm-hmm. May I see it?
Yeah. The one I have is just a little one that's, you know, maybe the size of a dollar.
Oh, that does smell nice.
Yeah. They have a whole bunch of different flavors.
Don't say flavors.
Flavors.
Scents. It doesn't say what this scent is, but it's just really
it's
light.
It's called Tomboy.
Okay.
It smelled to me like vacation because it has kind of a sunscreeny smell.
Yeah, a sunscreeny smell, like a copper tone kind of.
Mm-hmm. It's a little tropical-ish, but anyway.
It's nice.
Lolo bar. So I think any lotion bars you can get.
Yeah, I think they're a good idea.
All right. Hello. How do you become a fast knitter? I already knit continental, which people say is the fastest way to knit. However, I still feel really slow. I know it takes practice, but do you have any tips on how to focus on increasing speed? Thanks, Kaylee from Columbia, Missouri.
Hi, Kaylee. I wish I had an absolute answer for you here, but the only way to get faster is to practice. And you can help yourself a little bit by using fast needles, like chrome needles, like Addy Turbos are a good choice, or Knitter's Pride Platinas, and we can link to both of those in the show notes. Those do help with speed, I think. And she is knitting continental, which is a great way to knit quickly. Do you have any advice for her?
I'm not very fast, I don't think.
Is it important to you to be fast?
No.
That's so process knitter of you.
I know.
that's the thing. All you can do is practice and just get the movements, the economy of movement down to almost nothing, where you're creating the stitches with so little movement, and then practicing the muscle memory of creating the same stitch just as the one before it, the next stitch as the one before it, and that's it. I guess you have to focus on getting faster and use fast needles.
And maybe watch some fast people, because I've seen some really crazy fast knitters, like on Instagram or whatever.
Yeah, and like they have the world's fastest knitter and stuff.
They have a very unique way of knitting, I think. Some of people do. Like
it's
just
not
on the very tip top of the needles.
Yeah.
I'm a thrower, so I'm like all dramatic.
Yours is every stitch is a big production.
My whole arms.
I've seen people do that where they like throwers who are throwing the yarn their right hand, where they actually pick up their elbow each time. It's like, oh.
Their shoulder must hurt.
I'm thinking about the amount that I knit, like at Christmas time.
Oh, yeah.
And if I lifted my elbow each time, and I'm doing it right now, of course, if I lifted my elbow each time I knit a stitch, I'd be in traction.
Yeah.
I'd be so sore.
Yeah. And I do find myself, my shoulder does get sore, but that's just the way I sit at my desk. And
also you knit in bed.
And I knit in bed, and I find myself knitting like totally sideways.
It's the same thing that ergonomics experts say about, you know, sitting up straight at your computer and stuff. Yes. We have to watch our posture. But that's and actually, if you do get yourself in a really good ergonomic position, it's only going to improve the speed that you can pick up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, sure.
But practice is the only thing, or lots of coffee, whatever.
All right, one more.
Sure. Oh, it's a long one.
Hi, Stacy and Casey. I'm loving the podcast. It's a great way to escape the grind of a Thursday morning workday when I'm not allowed to actually knit anything. I'm almost finished knitting a pair of gloves, the first and probably last pair I will make. I've made lots of mittens before, but man, gloves are a lot of finicky finishing work and extra ends to weave.
You know, they really are. As much as I like gloves, like reattaching the yarn to start each finger and then finishing and then starting and finishing, you know, for a pair of gloves, you have 20 extra ends to weave in. And that's only if you're doing it in a single color. Mm-hmm. Okay, anyway.
So the pattern I'm using features a mosaic colorful pattern.
That's just what I was saying, yeah.
On an elongated cuffed wrist section that has been a new fun technique to learn. It's something a bit different in Fair Isle color work I already love, so the challenge was great. The pattern is Sugarland glove pattern, and the cuff part of the glove looks great with the hand-dyed yarn I used for the main color, a great way to feature the variations on the color dyeing, in the color and dyeing. Because I love that part of the pattern so much, I could see knitting these again as a gift to others, but with the amount of work they are taking for each finger and finishing, it's like knitting a sweater. Can you tell I'm a project knitter? I have the Ann Budd Handy Book of Patterns with a basic mitten pattern, and I thought I could use the cuff chart for mittens instead of gloves next time. Is there anything I should keep in mind when converting these from gloves to mittens? It seems pretty straightforward in my mind, but it would not be fun to get to the finished color work section and then realize I can't finish the mittens as intended because I forgot to consider something important. Thanks in advance, Rachel from Hamilton, Ontario, Canada.
Okay, that's a good question, Rachel. She doesn't want to fiddle with all the fingers in a pair of color work gloves. She'd just like to make mittens out of them. That's a great idea. But here's the thing, Rachel. She's a project knitter. You're venturing into something that's a little bit of design work, and you have to be a bit more process knitter to really...
Because
it might not work out the way you thought, and you might have to to rip back some color work stuff that you did. Might happen. I'm going to try to give you some advice to make that so maybe it won't happen. Whatever the stitches are that you had before the pattern has you start, before the pattern has you knit the fingers, that number of stitches around, what part of this called? Around the fingers.
Basic.
Just palm. Whatever that stitch count, palm, around the widest part of your palm. Is that the widest part of your palm? Just below your fingers. We don't know what it's called. We're not doctors, okay?
You're not here for medical advice.
Whatever that stitch count is fine. You should be able to just use that stitch count and do your color work and stuff until you get up to the part of the Ann Budd book for the size you're knitting. It'll tell you how many inches from... Is it the end of the thumb or the end of the ribbing? I don't know. It'll tell you to when to start the decreases and then just follow the decreases. You might have to do a little bit of fancy math decreasing to get you down to the number of stitches to start the decreasing evenly, because like you might need a multiple of 8 stitches, for example, to do the decreasing in the Ann Budd pattern, and your color work might be a multiple of 9. Mm-hmm. So you might need to make one or knit two together a few times, whatever it is. It won't make a difference in the end product, and then do the decreases. But that it shouldn't be a difficult modification, and it's a great idea for a modification. But just keep in mind that a little bit of ripping back, it's a little bit of knitting, it's just a glove. It's not, you know, a whole man's sweater or something. You might have to rip back. But it's good, because once you have written it down, you've done it, you've written it down, you knit a second one, everybody gets a pair of mittens for Christmas. There you go.
Yeah.
Everybody loves you. Your life is great. It's a life-changing hack.
All right.
Okay.
We're good.
We are good on this episode. Casey, if people want to find you online.
My website is kcknits.com, the letter K and the letter C.
Okay. And will you have any more pictures or anything about from your interview?
Sure. I'll come up with something.
I don't want to pressure you.
Maybe I'll write about stashing and how I feel about stashing, because it's so emotional and a lot of stuff has come up through like I've been thinking about it.
Right.
Since talking to her, so.
But did you take pictures that day?
I just took pictures of where we sat by the water. And you can hear the seagulls in the background.
Yeah. So. That's right. Well, I will link to your blog in the show notes. Like I always do. And if you want to find me online, there is, of course, the Very Pink Knits YouTube channel, and there's my website, verypink.com. And if you scroll down on the homepage, there are my social media buttons to Instagram and Facebook and everything else. But that is all that we have for this week. So until next week, stay warm, my friends.